Mike Mayo isn't your typical Wall Street analyst. In a financial world where conformity pays and criticism costs, Mayo built his career challenging powerful banks and their executives, often at tremendous personal expense. His journey from Federal Reserve regulator to Wall Street's most feared banking analyst reveals the deeply dysfunctional relationship between financial institutions, their regulators, and the analysts supposedly providing objective guidance to investors. What makes Mayo's story particularly compelling is how his outsider status, shaped by his immigrant family background and repeated professional rejections, fueled his willingness to speak uncomfortable truths when others remained silent. As Warren Buffett noted, Mayo became one of the few analysts who dares to say the emperor has no clothes, earning both admiration and powerful enemies along the way. Mayo's financial education began at the Federal Reserve, his Marine Corps boot camp for bank regulators, after collecting rejection letters from major banks. At the Fed, Paul Volcker's philosophy shaped his thinking. If something grows like a weed, maybe it is a weed. In the merger approval division, Mayo analyzed 119 deals in a year, with reports scrutinized meticulously. His most memorable moment came presenting in the Fed's impressive main conference room, with its two-story ceiling and 27-foot mahogany table. Facing Chairman Greenspan and the governors, Mayo froze when questioned about a small Kansas bank application. Breaking into Wall Street in 1992, Mayo discovered analysts weren't necessarily brilliant. They often received information directly from companies they covered, sometimes having CFOs review their spreadsheets. When Mayo wrote a mildly negative report about KeyCorp, the company cut off banking business with his firm. After recommending Bank One stock, he gained access to CEO John McCoy, who invited Mayo and his wife on the corporate jet. Client entertainment was extravagant, with Credit Suisse renting helicopters for golf outings and providing private dining. Mayo's biggest missteps involved resisting investment bankers' demands to help secure deals. When asked how to convert his relationship with Bank One CEO into warmth into money, he admitted having no idea and received poor marks for not being a team player. By 1999, Mayo's research indicated bank stocks would turn downward. Banks were making riskier consumer loans while executive compensation soared. His 1,000-page report concluded he couldn't find a single bank stock worth buying, a radical position when most analysts maintained 100-to-1 buy-to-sell ratios. On May 24, 1999, Mayo shocked everyone by announcing sell bank stocks across the board. The backlash was immediate. Portfolio managers accused him of self-destructing, CNBC commentators mocked him, and he received threatening messages. Mayo predicted aggressive home lending could lead to trouble if a recession affected housing, a warning that would take nearly 10 years to prove true. His predictions materialized within months. The S&P Bank Index peaked in July 1999 and fell over 20% by year-end. Bank One missed earnings, losing $15 billion in market value, with CEO John McCoy departing by December. Despite his accuracy and higher rankings, Mayo was fired in September 2000 when Credit Suisse acquired DLJ, just 16 months after his negative call that proved increasingly accurate. What's most surprising about the 2008 financial crisis is how little was actually new. The fundamental causes, risky mortgages, aggressive bank growth, and weak regulation, have recurred throughout banking history. Even innovative products like option arms resembled the risky interest-only loans of the 1920s that contributed to the Great Depression. Banks typically grow with nominal GDP at about 7% annually, yet constantly push for more aggressive growth through riskier ventures. In Mayo's 1999 report, he questioned banks' expansion plans. Citigroup and Fifth Third, which projected 15% growth, became the worst performers over the next decade, while conservative Wells Fargo thrived. During both the tech and housing bubbles, traditional banks abandoned their models to emulate riskier specialists. The 2008 crisis ultimately defied historical precedents, with loan losses exceeding 3%, 6 times the previous high. Mayo compares this to baseball's RBI record suddenly jumping from 191 to 1200. Financial institutions that had survived the Great Depression collapsed within days, nearly bringing down the entire global financial system. Citigroup has been implicated in virtually every major financial scandal of the past decade: Enron, WorldCom, analyst scandals, and the mortgage crisis, costing shareholders approximately $100 billion in pre-tax losses between 2001 and 2010. Since 1998, the company has cycled through 4 CEOs, 6 CFOs, and undergone 30 major reorganizations. This recklessness has deep historical roots. In the 1920s, Citi invested about 80% of its capital in Cuban sugar producers, then securitized and sold this debt to U.S. investors just before the 1929 crash when prices collapsed. Walter Wriston, CEO from 1967 to 1984, developed products specifically to circumvent New Deal banking regulations, operating on the principle that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. Despite his anti-regulation stance, he readily sought government assistance during crises. The 2008 financial crisis exemplified this troubled pattern when Citi invested heavily in toxic mortgage assets, understated its exposure by about $40 billion, and received the largest industry bailout when deemed too big to fail. A decade ago, Mayo discovered that analysts could influence banks more effectively than regulators by moving stock prices, demonstrating how market forces outweigh regulatory authority in our financial system. Mayo proposes an ABC approach to improve capitalism: better accounting standards, real bankruptcy consequences, and clout for outsiders against insiders. His solution demands accountability when bills go unpaid and rejects the too-big-to-fail concept. While creative destruction remains essential to healthy capitalism, our system still shields large institutions from their mistakes. The ideal banking model isn't found on Wall Street, but in Buffalo's M&T Bank, the best-performing large bank stock since 1983. MT prioritizes loss prevention over growth, with executives earning roughly one-tenth of their peers' compensation while owning 10 times more stock, encouraging prudent risk management. Mayo's negative call on banks in 1999 puzzled many who couldn't comprehend risking career for principal over profit. This perspective came from his middle-class upbringing, where he learned that success without satisfaction is meaningless, illustrated by his stepdad pointing to a wealthy but miserable restaurant patron. "Look at that schmuck, all the money in the world, and he's miserable." His exile from banking brought unexpected benefits, coinciding with his daughter's birth and allowing precious time he would have missed during typical 80-hour work weeks. Since returning, he's maintained family balance, adjusting his schedule for bedtime stories and school events. Mayo believes life's meaning derives from 3 elements: discovering what you excel at, finding what you love doing, and using these talents to improve the world, aligning with the Jewish principle of tikkun olam, repairing the world. While many on Wall Street measure success solely in dollars, Mayo has found deeper satisfaction improving banking practices. His journey shows setbacks often create opportunities for unexpected growth. Though still ambitious, he's discovered meaningful work is its own reward, contributing to something larger while maintaining the human connections that matter most.